Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another episode of the NOAA Rundown. I'm Jordan Grove, joined by Will Osgood and Jason Bernos. Possibly Trey will be joining us a little later on. And, you know, if we had the sounder up, I feel like we should start it with that NSYNC song, Bye, 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 because of how Boogie did us and did the Pelicans. So that kind of gives you a preface of what we're going to talk about on this show. NBA free agency, we previewed it last episode, and the fallout has occurred. And we kind of see where the Pelicans are at, better or worse. So let's go ahead and jump right into it. And the biggest story here is what happened with Boogie Cousins. So apparently, while Boogie's camp is saying that there was no discussions at all with the Pelicans, that turned into a whole big pile of hog wallop. And the Pelicans are saying that they did offer Boogie about a 2-year, $40 million contract, which he basically said, $40 million, are you kidding me? F that right in the A. F y'all, MFers, I'm going to go play for five with Golden State. So, Will, what do you think of the Pelicans offering Boogie a 2-year, $40 million contract even after his injury? Was that smart on their part? I mean, were they kind of hedging their bets? What do you think about that?
Yeah, when I saw that news, I was like, what? That's crazy talk. How are you going to offer a guy $20 million a year? And we've talked about this with, you know, the injury that he had. You know, not a lot of guys have had success, you know, coming or at least the same level of success, you know, coming back from that injury. So I thought that part was crazy. Like, that seemed like a really generous offer on the Pelicans' part. I wouldn't have been comfortable offering him that much money. But, you know, I guess I can also understand it to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, I can get it. I would assume it was 1 year for $20 million with probably either a team or player option for the last year, just hedging their bets, you know. But I feel slighted about the decision he made. And I now have a lot of hate in my heart for Boogie, but not as much as Jason. Jason, if you've got hate in your heart, let it out.
Let me tell you something about Boogie. Okay? He cried so much about not having the love. Okay? This team just offered him 2 years, $40 million after he ripped his Achilles. Okay? That's one. Two, your little best buddy, or whatever you want to, or whatever, AD was to be on the team, wearing your jersey. It's like, man, showing you the love. Come on, come back. Let's do this thing. And then Demps trades this ridiculous amount for you to basically save his job and then reinvest in you after you're injured, but nobody's showing you the love. I'm not understanding this. So your entire life you've been a bitch, and now you're showing it right now. So you can go cry and go get your little championship ring next year, because we all know they don't mean shit the last 3 years. Including next year, they won't mean shit, because it does. You can asterisk the F out of all of that. Okay, so you can go get your ring, get healthy, and go cry to another team and say, yes, I'll play super really hard for you, I promise, because I'm getting paid. And I'll never, ever act like a bitch after I get all of my money up front. Never, ever. So that's his game plan. He wants to be about that life. He makes, this is what's sad. he makes LeBron so much more likable right now. Like, even after everything. Like LeBron went to the Lakers. You know how many people hate the Lakers but now would watch the Lakers over watching anything Boogie Cousins? Like, oh, he's such a bitch. He's such a bitch. You could have worked with this team on a sign and trade, got your money. Did you call this a chess move? You're an idiot. Because if it was a chess move, you'd have forced them to sign and trade you so that team could keep your bird rights so you can make more money. Chess move? You're an idiot. That's what you are.
Yeah, like, you make a ton of good points, because not only by doing what he did, by signing what is basically the bi-level exception, you take away the bird rights from the Pelicans. You don't give any other team your bird rights. So you just took your max money off the table. You could have been traded, not only helped the team out with the Pelicans, but gone to wherever you wanted and got paid. You had a team build a whole campaign slogan around you, the do it bigger or whatever the slogan was. You took a crap on that. You basically bitch slapped your teammate and University of Kentucky alum Anthony Davis in the face because the dude wore your jersey to the All-Star game. So you want to talk about loyalty and having teams and teammates and fans show you the love? I don't know how in New Orleans the players, the fans, the teammates could have done anything more to show him that they wanted to keep him on the team. I don't see how they could have done anything else.
He's an idiot. He's like that's a chess move? Like, that, you really? Like, does he even understand what chess is? Like, yeah, what are you thinking, three steps ahead? No, you're not. You're an idiot. Like, that's it. It's plain and simple. Oh, you've got your feelings hurt because, oh, let me say, the market wasn't there like you wanted to. Oh, the Lakers signed LeBron and then decided to sign everybody else besides you. So you got your feelings hurt. So then you in turn called Golden State, you had your agent call Golden State and Boston to see if they would take the fight deal that you were offering. And so Golden State took the bait because why not? They were going to win a ring without you. That's how insignificant you really are, because you realize you're going to be pulled out of later game anyway. Nobody cares about you, Boogie. Nobody cares about you anymore. Just saying. And I hope you come back before the season like you're telling everybody and rush back and have one of those shitty injuries on top of injuries that screwed over Derrick Rose so you can have your little free agency next year and get paid like you want to. Yeah.
So here, there's more to it as well. The only reason, and Trey brought this up, and he's not here yet to really go into detail, but so Boogie, you know, we all know that he blew out his Achilles, but to not have your bird rights, to take them off the table from the team that has them and then sign for as little as he did, if he was healthy, the NBA Players Association would be rioting right now because you're just taking money from people off the table. So there, like, something needs to be done going forward. So if you're an all-star caliber player, you need to be paid a certain amount of money from a team so stuff like this doesn't happen. You've already got, like, the Western Conference is, like, the all-stars of the NBA. Golden State is, like, the monstars, you know, the elite of the elite. And so you don't even have any type of parity in the NBA at all as far as East and West. You know, at least, like, in Major League Baseball, you know, you've got some parity. Hockey, you have parity. Football, you have parity, but the NBA, you've got the Rockets, the Lakers, the Warriors, Oklahoma City, San Antonio is usually in the mix, even though they're not going to win a ring. New Orleans is down there, like 7th or 8th seed. But then, I can only name two All-Stars in the East, and that's Greek Freak and Kemba Walker.
It's crazy that, a team like the Denver Nuggets that just barely missed the playoffs in the West, going into this season, could probably be a 3 seed in the East.
Yeah. Definitely.
It's just crazy. And it comes to the point where, I get traditionalists want to keep the East and West, and you have to so you can make the regular season matter. But once you get, even in All-Stars shouldn't be, regulated to just, East and West anymore, really. It should just be all based on either fan voting for the first and then, how they do it. But just don't settle just for East and West. And then bleed that into your playoffs and don't have 12 teams from the West and have 4 from the East. Still have your 8-8, but just reseed it better so you don't have the NBA Finals as the Western Conference Finals this year.
I mean, that's basically what it's going to be. You're probably going to have the Lakers against the Warriors in the Western Conference Final this year. And
the
then
Lakers
the winner
aren't
goes on to
barely
face.
Make the playoffs. The Lakers are barely going to make that. Everybody's going crazy. They're going to be like a 7th seed, maybe a 6th seed.
So the way I look at it, if LeBron can drag this year's Cleveland to the finals, I think he can at least drag the Lakers to the Western Conference Finals.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Dragging a crappy team in the East to the finals would be like the equivalent in the West of making it to the second round.
Yeah.
So, there's still another domino to fall, too. Nobody knows where Kawhi Leonard's going to wind up. And Clint Capella, too. Nobody knows if he's going to be signed away from Houston or if Houston's going to match and he's going to stay there. They've already lost Trevor Ariza, so losing Clint Capella would be another gigantic blow to that team with how critical he was last year to the Rockets. And while the Pelicans did lose Boogie, we kind of saw last year after he went down with injury and they readjusted what type of team they could be. They really started to pick up the pace. They started to gel more. And a lot of that, though, was due to the leadership of one Rajon Rondo, who also left the Pelicans for a 1-year, $9 million deal to the Los Angeles Lakers. So, Will, losing Rajon Rondo, how big of a loss is this? You signed Elfrid Payton, which we'll discuss a little bit, but obviously losing Rajon Rondo is a crucial blow, way more than Boogie, right?
Yeah, if we're assuming that the Pels with Rondo could have been, what they were, in the last 6 weeks of the season and into the playoffs when they swept the Blazers, and the Rondo loss would be bigger, a lot bigger. And not to steal away from the separate discussion we'll have on Elfrid Payton, but I think I can say this at the moment, clearly, it's the value of a replacement player. You're in the negative on that with that, essentially trade, of Payton for Rondo. So you're in the negative at that position. So if you just wanted to look at it kind of mathematically or whatever. But at the same time, like, Rondo was good, certainly. But, I mean, he doesn't play a lot of defense. He can't shoot. And so, I mean, it's not like you're missing this, like, all-world player or something. I mean, you lost a guy who you can probably replace talent. I mean, certainly skill and talent-wise, you can replace. The only concern is the leadership, but at the same time, like, I think Drew and AD are coming into their own in that realm anyway, and it should be their team, and they should be the ones, you know, who are really leading the squad anyway. So, yes, I mean, it's not ideal. Would have loved to re-sign him, but I don't think we should freak out about it, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Jason, is now a perfectly good time to freak out?
Is Jason here? Oops.
Team. You can get by with Peyton on a team. I mean, Rondo in the playoffs, you're not going to replace unless Drew and AD really take another level step to, you know, their leadership. But, I mean, stats-wise, honestly, you're getting Peyton on a low-risk, really high-reward, which, I mean, he's had so many coaching changes, so many offensive philosophies he's gone through. I think it's actually, minus the playoffs, I think it might be an actual upgrade, because you never really knew when Rondo was going to combust, to be honest with you. It was kind of like a boogie ticking clock. So, I mean, I'm fine with the Peyton move, but I honestly don't think I don't know if he starts off the season as a starter. I don't know if they still, like, there's still a trade to be made out there for the Pelicans. And I think it's going to be it's going to be either a combo guard or just a strictly point guard. And I don't think you're starting point guards on the team right now. And I'd rather not have Drew do that, because you saw how well Drew played when he played his natural position. And I'd rather have him there being an all NBA guard instead of putting him back full time at the one.
Yeah, I actually, like, I didn't mind the elf move, because if you look at some of his advanced stats, like, they're not terrible.
No.
And I've seen people say that, oh, well, you know, he's a top 10 pick, and those picks aren't traded twice while he's still into his rookie deal. But he also went to two just badly run organizations. Like, I don't trust the Magic organization, their coaching staff, their system, and the Suns, for how good they were in about, like, the mid-2000s. They really just kind of fell flat in their face. So I feel it's a really strong buy low contract, where he can come in, maybe, like Jason said, maybe he doesn't start. Maybe he comes off the bench while he gets acclimated into the system, and then he starts, like, becoming the starter maybe, like, around November, December, something like that. I feel like he's going to play his tail off, because he's playing in his home city. You know, the dude even has a Florida B tattoo on his forearm, for crying out loud. So, like, I know that he's psyched about being there. So he's going to give 110% when he's on the court.
He's from the West, thank you.
Yeah. So I feel like it's a really solid signing. Like, I wasn't, like, over the moon about it, but I wasn't poo-pooing it at all. Like, I just feel like it's a pretty good deal that he can, he's young and develop with the team and kind of learn the system from there. So Another move that I was, like, psyched for, and we were talking about it in the chat, and me and Will were going at it, like we've been doing. The Lakers, in order to make room for half the league that they signed during free agency, they released Julius Randle, who the Pelicans almost immediately snatched up. So you're looking at a dude who last season just balled out. He's a really active four, good shooter, good defender, good size. He's a better center version of Boogie. So, Jason, were you excited to see Randle get signed by the Pelicans?
I would. And just to give the listeners a little funny insight to the group chat, we were literally talking about Randle seconds or minutes before, like, Tony had popped into the group chat and was like, signed Randle. Like, we had literally just been discussing it, and we're like Jordan said, Jordan and Will were kind of like going back and forth, and then it happens just like that. But yeah, no, I love Randle coming out of Kentucky. He was the baby Z-Bo, man. He was Zach Randle, and that's what people thought they were gonna get in Randle. And last season, the Lakers promised him a starting role, and he got in great shape, and just never was like Kuzma. I guess just Kuzma just passed him up, and just never really found his niche off the bench. And I'm saying that while his advanced stats and regular stats are so. I mean, just imagine if this motivated person was given 36 to 40 minutes a game instead of 24.
Yeah.
So Will, like we were kind of going, like Vince said, back and forth. I was pro Randle. You were no Randle team. Now that he is on the team, has your opinion changed at all? Did you finally hop on board the Randle bandwagon?
Yeah, I actually have. Because I've gone back and looked a little more intently, really at the numbers specifically. And I mean, you just look at, like, last year he had 6.6 win shares. Like, that's pretty good for a guy who, like Jason said, was playing, playing 26, about 27 minutes a game. For a guy to have 6.6 win shares, that's pretty good.
Right.
And then, you look at, the dude's a beast of a rebounder. He attacks the rim hard, which is always a good thing for a power forward type player. There was something else I remember saying in the chat too that was pro Randle. Oh, I think it was just that since he missed basically his entire rookie year, he's only missed nine games in the subsequent three seasons. So he's clearly it doesn't seem like health is a big issue with him. You don't have to worry about that just because he missed his rookie year. And so, there's a lot to like. The only real concern is, he still hasn't really developed a jump shot at all. And so that might cause, defenses to kind of pack the lane a little bit more when he's in there. It might make it more difficult to spread the floor like the Pelicans like to do. But if he can even, find some semblance of a jump shot, I love the signing, and I think I do agree he can be a really good fit with AD.
Yeah, I think that you're going to get a better version of Boogie, meaning that, you know, with Boogie, he was really talented, but there was also the ball kind of stopped with him. He didn't mind doing some spot-up threes for a big man, whereas Randle kind of knows his role. Like, he's not going to – I feel like he's more of a team player, which is going to only benefit the team even more. So you can really – like stagger your lineup to have either him run with the second team or Mirotić still run with the second team and Randle play next to Boogie. So, yeah. You know, like how does this lineup change with Randle in the fold?
Yeah, I wanted to get to that too. So I'm glad you gave me a chance to answer that. So personally, what I would do is I would start Randle next to AD. And I think AD, you know, obviously defensively, I think, would be playing the five, but offensively, you'd kind of switch him. And so Randle would kind of be the five. He'd be the guy that, you know, you'd more or less keep around the basket. And you let AD, which, I mean, he's showing he can hit a three. So I think his three-point attempts should go way up this year, I hope. Because, I mean, you just – that's what – like, in today's NBA, you just have to have that. Like, you cannot have two guys on the floor who don't shoot the three ball anymore. You just can't do that. So, hopefully AD's three-point attempts double, maybe. I mean, I don't have in front of me what he took last year. But and assuming that, you know, he continues to shoot a – you know, a decent percentage with those. But yeah, so you have Randle kind of defensively, I think, playing the four probably, but offensively playing more around the basket, letting AD kind of do some more perimeter type stuff. And then, I mean, there's even a possibility at times maybe you can go really big and put Nico in there and have those three play together. Might not work great defensively, but I think that'd be a pretty stout offensive lineup. And of course, that's also going to depend on potential trades and things like that too. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was thinking that right now, but barring any other trades or any other signings or, you know, moves in general, right now you have to envision that the finishing five is going to be Drew, AD, Randle, and Mirotić with a combination of either Solomon Hill or Etuan Moore right now. Just you want to get your best players on the court to finish out games. And right now, Randle is, for my money, better than Solomon Hill. So, but you know, play the matchups and everything. So, speaking of trades and all of that, Jason, what other kind of moves do you think the Pels might make? To finish off this offseason?
I just either got to figure out, and right now, I don't think you do any trade with Solomon Hill unless you're getting a starting three back to finish off your start lineup. But because his value is just not there. Right now, he's healthy. And he's worth more to this team than he is to any other team. Because you're not going to get much of anything from him other than maybe a role player and a second-round pick. I just don't see anything involving him. Etuan Moore is a valuable role player. I wouldn't trade him. It's an $8 million contract. It's not that bad. But they have to get better at small forward. I think they still have faith in Hill, and they want and his skill set, if he's actually healthy, he doesn't really need to score that much. And I'm saying that as you know, you really want scoring out of your wing, but when you have 25 to 30 coming from AD, and time, you know, me and Will were kind of going back and forth with numbers on averages. You got enough scoring coming when you add all this up, especially Randall coming in, even with Peyton scoring. And Peyton is a better scorer, and this is saying something because he's terrible, but he's a better scorer than Rondo was. So he'll average more than Rondo. So,
yeah.
I mean, I Hill's elite defense is really why he got paid. So you want that person, if he's healthy, to be on a roster in the playoffs to lock somebody down. So, but even still, if you can get him starting and you can get some value out of him, you can get something back going forward that even better can, you know, fit into the system like another shooter, because you gotta do something. You gotta add one more shooter. That's really what I'd want to see. And as much as we dog Django Hill and that terrible contract because he's been injured, he's healthy now, and he's shown spurts when he's been healthy. And you're already $24 million into this guy, so. Can't get rid of the contract, might as well see what you can get out of him, right? It's at that point.
So, well, like, do you think the Pelicans need to just hang on to Hill and see what, or do you think that they could see what they could get from him? Because looking at the Pelicans roster, if they were to move anybody, it's going to be likely either Ethan Moore or it's going to be Solomon Hill. Obviously, the obvious choice being Solomon Hill just because of the contract that he has. So
do you
envision them signing anybody else in free agency, barring any trades, or do you see a trade coming first?
Yeah, well, so here's the thing. And, I mean, you also have maybe the most attractive trade piece would be the Ajinsa contract. Just because teams, especially if they're not serious about contending this year, they love expiring contracts because it means cap room next year, right? And Ajinsa's contract will finally be expiring after this year. So he's a great guy. Like a team maybe like Orlando, I know we've thrown that around in the chat, you know, could almost go one for one, you know, for Jonathan Simmons, who somehow is only making $6 million a year. I still don't understand how that's possible. So something like that might be possible. The Clippers are another team. The Clippers should be rebuilding. It doesn't seem like they want to, but that's what they should be doing. And if they ever, you know, in the next month or so, figure out what they should be doing. That might be a place, you know, to go searching for a guy you love and Tobias Harris. And you can probably package Solomon Hill and maybe even Ajinsa, and maybe you can get like a Tobias Harris and Milos Teodosic, however you pronounce that,
we should have started this. You should have said that this needs an NSFW warning on it because I am all kinds of aroused with you talking this trade scenario.
Sorry for not giving you the warning there.
Can we do Man Crush Monday real quick? I'm about to roll out soon.
You can do your Man Crush. How about that?
Yeah, that sounds good. I just wanted to, before I rolled out, give a little love to, if I don't know the guy's name, I know you've all, both of y'all have seen the highlight. This pitcher got hit a ball, a line drive, come right back and hit him in his pitching elbow.
Forget what
team he played for, but he got hit, so he runs after the ball and throws his glove off, grabs the ball, and whips it the first to get the out, with not with his throwing arm, but with his left arm. And I don't know the guy's name, but, like, as somebody who grew up playing baseball for, like, 15 years, that was insane that, like, you can go and grab that ball and just toss it without not with your throwing arm. And then he just dropped instantly in, like, enormous amount of pain.
Yeah. Vince Velasquez for the Phillies.
Yeah. So,
yeah,
that was crazy. All right, guys, I got to sign off, man. You guys finish off. Finish strong.
All right.
Cool.
All right, brother.
Thanks, dude.
All right, so we only really have a couple more things to talk about before we put a bow on this show. And really, we'll just kind of do this rapid fire. But before we get to that, I'll lay down my thoughts on any moves the Pelicans can make. Obviously, I'm in love with that idea of trading for Tobias Harris. I think that would be an excellent move, obviously. Another move that I like that I saw on Twitter was trading Hill and a Jinka and a top-10 protected first for Terrence Ross and Jonathan Simmons. So – either or, I'd be completely okay with. So,
yeah.
Well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. And I don't really see any other free agents that they could sign that would make a strong impact, other than maybe like a Wayne Ellington or something like that. If he hasn't signed for Miami, just have him run with the second unit and just shoot the ball into the basket. Yeah, you know, that's all they would want him to do.
Yeah,
so,
that literally would do something. Go ahead.
So, what was your thoughts, real quick, on LeBron going to the Lakers?
Yeah, well, and Bert, you know, Jason kind of alluded to this a little bit earlier, you know, kind of, you know, matching it up with the Boogie thing. So, you know, obviously, the first time LeBron left Cleveland, it was, oh my gosh, how could you do this to them? You know, you have people burning jerseys and Cleveland just, you know, going insane. And this time, there was none of that. Like, they were appreciative, like, thank you so much for winning us a championship. And, like, we understand, we know Cleveland sucks. Like, we'd leave if we could, too. You know, all this kind of stuff. And just so really interesting. Dynamic in that sense. I don't know. You know, I wish he didn't go to the Lakers, just because I don't like the Lakers. But I get it. Like, you know, it was pretty obvious that his family was moving there no matter what. So that's like, okay, that makes sense that he would go to play for them. And I get, like, the, you know, being mentored by Magic Johnson to become a, you know, future business mogul or whatever you want to call it. Like, I get all that. And yeah, I don't really think it's a basketball decision as much as it is a lifestyle or like a life decision. But at the same time, he gets to play for the most iconic franchise in maybe, I mean, one of the most iconic in American sports, you know. So, I mean, it makes sense. I can't really be too mad at him. And I think the way he handled it by not making a big deal of it, you know, like the first time, I think that helped too. I mean, those are just some of my thoughts. What were your thoughts on it?
I was kind of surprised. I thought he was going to end up staying in Cleveland, but I get why. He's brought Cleveland a championship. That's what he went there to do. Anything else he accomplishes is just Lania. Yeah. And he does like the lifestyle, like you said. You know, he started his career in Cleveland. He left to go to South Beach. Played with some of his friends in South Beach. Went back to Cleveland because he felt like he left them in not the best circumstances to leave a team. Won him a championship. So now he's just doing what he wants to do. You can't blame the guy. Plus, you also can't turn your nose down at the type of money that the Lakers were throwing at him.
Right, right.
And speaking of having money thrown at you, Paul George just had an absolute Brinks truck backed up to his front lawn to re-sign with Oklahoma City. I was surprised that he re-signed with Oklahoma City. I thought that was that wasn't a place where he wanted to return. And Oklahoma City right now is they've got some salary that they're paying out right now, like $300 million if I remember. Like, that's insane. So, I mean, it's only a foregone conclusion that they're going to cut Carmelo and save $93 million, which also is insane. But it certainly doesn't make the Thunder worse, but we kind of saw the experiment play out last year, and it wasn't all that great, Will. Like, I feel like Oklahoma City is just kind of treading water right now.
Yeah, exactly. That is a great analogy. Because, clearly it didn't work last year. And when you're just bringing the band back together, and one of those members is Carmelo Anthony, who says he has no plans to change the way that he plays, that's not a good mix. And it's not going to work. So I do think they're in the midst of trying to figure out, okay, is there anyone dumb enough to trade for Melo? Because that would obviously be the best case scenario for them, is if someone would just trade for him and give them back to something that you know, is a better fit for them basketball wise. Or do they need, to use the stretch provision, which would save them a lot this year, but it would partially hamstring their cap, further for the next couple of years. And so it's not an easy decision what to do, but I think if Paul is healthy, which I think he is, and if he's at full strength, and I don't just mean health-wise, but in terms of, like, I guess if he's bringing his A game, he and Russell Westbrook, like, that's a great combination. And they have, Steven Adams. Steven Adams has become a very good big man. And so there's definitely some pieces there. But it's not the kind of team, I don't think, that's going to knock off the Warriors. And I feel like even with the question still, around Houston, like, I don't think Houston, as we expect them to be, by the end of this offseason, like, Oklahoma City's not beating them either. And they're not. They wouldn't beat Boston. They wouldn't beat Philadelphia, probably. Philadelphia might be the only team of those, what I consider the top four teams in the league, that, they might have a chance against. But the other three, like, no, it's not even close, I don't think. So, yeah, they're treading water. I think they're just trying to figure out what to do with Melo, and then how they can maybe, improve their roster, find a better fit. But they're in a very precarious situation right now.
Yeah, I was thinking that the only team that may be desperate enough for a superstar would be Brooklyn. And I can see Melo wanting to go back to New York. So, we just kind of have to see how that plays out. But let's go ahead and wrap it up and do our Man Crush Wednesday. So Will, go ahead and start there, buddy.
Yeah, so the Man Crush Monday on Wednesday, because we keep recording on Wednesday. Wait, today's Thursday. Whatever. Well, with yesterday felt like a weekend, so really today feels like a Monday, right? But anyway, so for me, Man Crush Monday on Thursday is Cubs second / third baseman / shortstop / El Mago does whatever he wants to on the bases, Javier Baez. He was recently named the NL player of the week. At the same time that John Lester was named pitcher of the month for the National League. But he had an incredible week. Against the Dodgers, he hit like 1,000 home runs, it felt like. He's always dazzling with the glove. And I don't know if you saw it yesterday on the 4th of July. He had a plate appearance where I can't remember how he got on first. I think it was just a base hit. But then, so he's on first base, and he gets picked off of first. But instead of actually, getting out, he gets a throw to second. The throw to second goes wild. Then he gets up and he goes to third. So he basically steals two bases, just like that. And then the Tigers end up walking Addison Russell. So you have first and third. Russell draws a throw to first base, and Javi just takes off and steals home. And that was all the same, plate appearance / base running. Like, so basically he stole three bases, in one time around the bases. And that kind of stuff from him has just become almost routine. And so that's why I call him the most exciting player in baseball. I know there's maybe some debate about that, but to me he is. And I think not only that, but I think he's a legitimate National League MVP candidate at this point. So my Man Crush Monday on Thursday for this week is Javier Baez. How about you?
So I'm going a baseball player as well, but not on any of the teams that I like, and actually on a team I really don't like, but go to one of the colleges that I root for, and there aren't many in baseball. There's just two, and one of them's really well known. So he's an LSU product, and that's Aaron Nola, who is right now in 17 starts this season, 10-2 with a 2.4 ERA. He has the best ERA out of since 2011, or the lowest ERA since 2011. The other two Philly pitchers with ERAs close to that were Roy Halladay and Cole Hamels. Nobody in the National League has more wins than Aaron Nola. He is just magnificent when he's on the mound, a true gem to watch. He doesn't kill you with the fastball either. He'll kill you with other pitches, like a Greg Maddux type, which makes it all the more fun and interesting to watch. So that is my Man Crush, LSU product, Aaron Nola.
Yeah. Did you watch his start last night since it was on ESPN?
Yeah, I missed it. We were doing fireworks and stuff.
He was outstanding last night, but yeah, he'll probably be my Man Crush at some point too. Great, great young pitcher. Nasty breaking ball.
Yep. Filthy. I saw they had a GIF of it on Twitter, and it's just outright filthy. So, but that'll wrap it up for this show. We We'll come back again, probably wrap up free agency in case anything breaks down, and then we'll start gearing up for mini camp and everything for the Saints. So got some more fun shows lined up. So, that'll wrap it up.
All right. Adios.
Adios.
Championship.